Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Yes, indeed, Mayor Michael Bloomberg here in Studio 4 at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Spring has sprung.
Absolutely. Finally, a nice day for the moment.
The record for precipitation is 40 days and 40 nights, so I knew this would end.
just playing the odds.
Absolutely.
Right? Just playing the odds. Statue of Liberty opened today, or the announcement that it will be?
Yeah, the Interior Secretary is on Ellis Island to announce that, and I've always said if they could open the crown safely, they should do it. And there's been discussion over the years as to whether they can, because it's a narrow stairway going up and only one stairway rather than two. And if the NYPD can help, we will be happy to. But if they can open it, that's good news.
I'm assuming that they have come up with a plan, a physical plan to do this. Otherwise, they wouldn't have announced it.
Either that or they just made a decision that the security wasn't as serious as the last person. I mean, a lot of this stuff is judgment anyways. There's no one answer. Is it or is it not? How many doors do you need to get out of the room kind of thing is a judgment thing. Mm-hmm. And I gather they've decided that. They invited me to come, which was nice of them. Unfortunately, I had to say no. You think because I'm here with your listeners.
Well, aren't you nice?
It's another
smart decision.
It is also true that I have a reception right after this for state legislators against illegal guns, and I had a commitment to do that.
Yeah, and so, I thought it was for me. You've burst out of the bubble once again.
Well, it is. Listen, been doing this for a long time. Enjoy it. Before we went on the air, told you I met a guy on the subway this morning that says he's been listening for years, every day, never misses it. Did say Fridays was very good. He didn't say it was his favorite, but he said it was very good.
All right. Speaking of decisions that are made when it comes to security, you are absolutely right that those decisions are made on a daily, if not hourly, basis here in the city of New York and across the country and around the world, I suspect. One of the things in the president's budget cutting is something to do with terrorism support here in New York City.
Yeah. Ray's a little bit disappointed. We'll take a look at it and see. We'd like to do everything, and we can't do it all with our own money, and we'll have to sit down and take a look. And all of these things are not either or. Sometimes you can do a little bit of everything, but I'll talk to Ray later today about it. I'm going to see him. We have Memorial Day at One Police Plaza for police officers that have been shot in the past year, and so I'll see him later on this morning there.
Okay. You were in Washington. You were with the president, Newt Gingrich and Al Sharpton. That's an interesting foursome.
You know, it's funny. Al and Newt seem to have developed a friendship, and they've been doing some things together. Obviously come from very opposite parts of the political spectrum. But, you know, if it's education, which is what they were there for, if it's fighting crime, they can find a lot of grounds. And an odd couple like that sometimes can be very helpful and getting people to say, hey, this is not a partisan issue. This is an issue that concerns everybody. Met with the president, Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education. I gave the president the graphs of what we've done the last 7 years. Yesterday, by accident, happened to be the day the state announced state test scores for all of the state and cities. And
New York did pretty well.
Merrill Tisch, the chancellor for the state regents, happens to be a friend and a neighbor, should be very proud. The state did very well overall. What I'm concerned about, some people say, oh, the tests are easier when scores go up. But they never say the tests are harder when scores go down. They're just critical. But regardless, I don't know whether they've gone up or down the difficulty. I do know the state goes to great pains and hires lots of experts and has some pretty good science that they argue keeps it consistent from one year to another. Sometimes they use similar questions. You know, if five apples and three apples get added together, how many apples do you have? And don't say applesauce. Would be the joke.
I wouldn't even have
That's
gone
what the
there.
Kids would say. And then the next year they do it with five tomatoes and three tomatoes get added together. So that the tomato juice. Tomato juice, right. But the idea is to make it consistent. But whether it's consistent from one year to another in terms of difficulty, everybody in the state takes the same test. So it is very useful for us to compare New York City to the rest of the state. And that's, we've always been behind. We are catching up. And it's particularly useful to compare different ethnicities. So we've, I have some graphs that show you over the last few years, what's happened to test scores for white students, Asian students, black students, and Latino students. The good news is all have gone up. The better news is that the black and Latino scores have gone up much more. There's still a gap, but we are closing that gap, and we have to keep our nose to the grindstone.
What did the president tell you he wants to do?
Very concerned about education in this country, understands it's one of the top priorities. Did talk a little bit about education for adults who are in the workforce and don't have the right skills. And he's right, that's not what we're focusing on, obviously, in the public school system, although our public school system does have some programs for adults, and we try to keep kids in longer. One of the problems, it's fascinating, our school system is so diverse in terms of the kind of things we're trying to do and the kind of students that show up at the door. We have students who don't speak any English and who haven't been in school for half a dozen years, and they're high school students. And how you get that cohort to go to school and to stay in school and to learn is a great challenge. And we've actually had some pretty good success at it. Not perfect, but success. But, you know, some people say, oh, they always want to find fault with everything. And they, in this case, the news basically is very good. Would you like to have it get better even faster? Of course you would. But if you think about what's happened, I was at the Harlech Village Academy reception at the Apollo Theater last night. You know, they're sending 98% of their kids to college.
Awesome.
Or 100. Yeah. And you know, there's 100, we'll by this fall have 100 charter schools. Charter schools are great because they challenge the other kinds of public schools. Charter schools are public schools, but they just have a different approach, a different set of rules. And competition's great. And in spite of 100 charter schools, we have something like 30,000 kids who want to get into charter schools, and we need the state to change the law so we can have even more. It's up to the state.
Well, there's talk even of giving the state the veto power over charter schools.
You know, if you wanted to write a book about this, nobody would publish it because nobody believed that there are people who want to take away choice from parents. And, you know, they have their agendas. There's one guy who went said, oh, all this stuff is bull and the schools aren't getting any better. And then one of the newspapers published the statistics for the place where the guy lives and, you know, off the chart improvement. Crime is down in the schools. We have the biggest school construction budget we've ever had. Teachers get paid more than they ever have, and now we're paid comparable to the suburbs. We have performance pay. People are held accountable. You get a report card telling you how good the school is. There's the ability, we have these parent coordinators. You can just pick up the phone and call them and tell the teacher what you want the teacher to know about the home, the things you see at home with the student, and the teacher can...
You wouldn't believe that if you read some of the newspaper articles.
You know, when I said the other day, there was an article on the front page of one of the papers, 200 students who were waitlisted. You know, you want to solve your
waitlist? High school students, yes.
No, these were elementary school students,
elementary.
Or kindergarten, I think, actually. You want to solve your waitlisting problem? Yeah, make the schools worse. Nobody will want to go. The good news is everybody wants to go. And incidentally, most of these kids will get in. It's a process. Some kids get into gifted and talented classes, and then that opens other things. And people are flooding into the city to go to the public schools. You're going to see more and more in that, particularly after numbers like you saw yesterday come out from the state. It just says you don't have to leave this city as your kids grow up. And I can just tell you, you take the train in the morning. The number of people that say, you know, great job, schools are amazing. That's amazing what you've done. Keep going, keep going. And the parents.
And yet, and we don't have to get into this right at the moment, there is an upswell of talk, stories, newspaper articles, people screaming about reducing mayoral control here in the city. I mean, there's a real PR thing going on.
There is, well, that's one group that doesn't like it, but there is none, not one of the reforms that were done in the last 7 years would have been done without mayoral control. And mayoral control is one of these things. It either your mayor has control or you don't. My hope is that the law will be renewed between now and the end of June when it expires. If it doesn't, well, one of the things that happened is you'd have to take a lot of money out of the classrooms to reinstitute the bureaucracy we had before. Does anybody want that?
No, I don't think so. Mr. Mayor, hold tight here. Don't forget, we're going to take your questions at the end of the program. 800-321-0710. If you want to get in line, get in the queue now. It fills up fast. 800-321-0710. John and the mayor will be right back. This portion of the program brought to you by Novartis. Think what is possible.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, we continue 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here with us on a Friday. Again, a reminder, if you want to get in line with a question, 800-321-0710. I know that you put out a statement about the resignation of Lee Sanders. I was just saying before you showed up here, before 8 o'clock, I think the MTA, I don't have the specifics and the info like you do about the MTA, but it seems to me that the subway seemed to run a lot better, that the whole system seems to work a lot better, and here he gets, you know, he loses his head.
Well, one thing is the politics of it. You know, I don't know about the buses. I took a bus the other day with a woman who works as a security guard here in Manhattan, and she lives way out in Brooklyn, and she takes a bus every day and then the subways. But the subway I take every day, and I, you know, I've said this before, the subway that I take, and I take a number of different ones, seems to work every day for the last 7 years when I've been taking it every day. It's an awful lot better than it was when I came to New York. It's air-conditioned. It's clean. It is safe. It's reliable. I think I've gotten stuck once for about 10 minutes over the over the last 7 years. So in terms of that, I think, you know, the MTA does a pretty good job. Could they do it more efficiently?
They're criticized by everybody.
Yeah, well, it's just so easy a target. And, you know, they don't know how. I think their PR is not great. They don't know how to fight back. And it is also true that the state legislature gets involved all the time. For example, they have multiple bus companies. It's an outrage. I've screamed that they should combine them. Each one has its own bureaucracy, but they have different unions involved, and the state legislature refuses to combine them. Things like that, where you could save a lot of money and make the system better. Whoever runs the MTA, however, you can't blame them for that. Well, now, did Lee do a great job or not? I don't know close enough. I just I'm an expert on how well the subways I take work.
Either get
some
you
of
there
this
or
stuff,
they don't.
You know, there's two sets of books. Well, yeah, I don't know how to break this to you. You know, there's multiple sets of books for every organization, every company, because there are different requirements and different as to how you count revenues and expenses and
you
what's
don't
capitalized.
Mean that in, you don't mean that in a nefarious way. You're just talking about an accounting way.
Yes, everybody. Every system. Right. There is no separate set of books here. That this is just absolutely ridiculous. But anyways, the governor has the right to pick whoever he wants to run the subways, and whether he'll ask me or not, I don't know, for my advice. And we'll support anybody that he picks and do everything we can to help. We need a good mass transit system.
The governor said the other day that he would have preferred the tolling of the bridges, which I thought was quite an admission after all this was said and done.
You know, we have a number of problems, one of which is too many cars on our streets, which clogs the streets and slows down economic activity. And we need something that makes mass transit more attractive relative to driving your car. So if you make driving your car a little less pleasurable or economic, and mass transit a little bit better, that would move some people over and helps everybody.
Yesterday, I was talking with Malcolm Smith about this, and I asked him whether or not the MTA would be paying the employer tax, the 34 cents per $100 of salary. And the answer to us, he didn't know at the time, but he got back to me. And the answer is yes, that the MTA will indeed be paying it, which seems counterproductive to me and counterintuitive.
Well, it's just that's just moving money from one pocket to another,
it's
right?
Going in circles.
You know,
Will the city be paying?
I think the city does have to pay, and we figured it's something like $75 million, although some of it we get back in another ways. What the state did is they were going to tax school boards as well, and that raised enormous hackles.
Property tax issues.
In the other counties outside of the five that make up New York, education expense is a very big expense. Property taxes are a big deal, and they pay for the education with property taxes. So the legislation exempts or rebates it. I think it actually, they have to pay it, but the state gives them some money. At this point, we had so many bills, I've got to go back and read.
They're going to take it, but give it back.
What did they finally, that's nice. They take it, and they say they'll give it back, but the law that says they take it is going to go on, and whether they vote to give it back every year is up in the air. We've had a lot of experience over the last 2 years of them not voting to give what they'd promised the year before. If I were these other counties, and New York as well, we should all worry about it.
Exactly. That was my point this morning, that if the city has to pay this tax, the 34 cents, that means the people of New York are going to have to somehow, you're going to have to find the money.
Well, there is no cigarettes here. There's no free lunch. If you want services, whether it's the MTA or city government, state government, federal government, in the case of state, it's only partly true. In the case of federal government, it's really not true because federal government can print money. Right. State can borrow for operating. In the case of the city, if you want services, you got to pay for it. You want low crime, you got to have great cops, well-led, with lots of equipment, and that costs money. You want to have better schools, you got to have great teachers and compensate them so well that they're not going to go elsewhere and that they can focus on the classroom rather than worrying about how to pay the bills. That costs money. Same thing is true with sanitation, correction, all of the hundreds of thousands of people who work in our city and do everything, the unsung heroes, all the people represented by DC 37, they have hundreds, a thousand different titles. I don't know, but enormous number. They want to get paid. And if you want good people, you got to pay them. That's the answer. So it costs money.
And there's no other place to go except the people.
Whether you pay it through taxes or fees, whether it comes out of one pocket or another pocket. Yes, that's right. That's where it comes from us. And, a lot of people say, I don't want to pay more taxes. And you say, okay, would you like to cut back services? Absolutely. Okay, which services? Don't touch this, don't touch that. Pretty soon you get down the list, there's nothing left to do.
Well, the president is finding that with the $17 billion he wants to yank out of his budget, all of a sudden everybody and his brother is out there screaming, don't touch that. I'm
very sympathetic. The president has an even different situation. In our case, it's pretty much the public that says don't cut the services. In the president's case, it is Congress that says don't cut the services. Now, that's not to say our city council and state legislature don't. They do have impacts. But in Washington, nobody does these polls. You don't see people on the steps of the White House protesting, don't cut my services. There, it all takes place at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue. And it's, I want to cut defense, but not that program that's built, not that
built
boat or
state.
Airplane.
Right.
In my state, sure.
You're absolutely right. All right, Mr. Mayor, we made it to 8:30 here. What do you say we take a little break here, we get a news update. We will be right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg again. If you've got a question, 800-321-0710. Joe Bartlett.
Give John a call now, 800-321-0710.
23 before 9 o'clock. John and the Mayor with you here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Speaking of you, if you've got a question, 800-321-0710. What were you doing on Martha Stewart? I didn't know you were a cook. I didn't know you were a kitchen whiz.
I used to when I first lived in New York, cooked all my meals. I didn't eat out in restaurants very much, couldn't afford it. I was very good at shake and bake chicken.
Uh-huh.
Hamburgers. I can do a mean hamburger or a hot dog in a oven. The grill part of the oven. I could make good French toast. I was pretty good.
Still have the touch of yours, the sort of going away.
Yeah, Martha, all kidding aside, Martha's doing a show about New York. And so to help, promote New York, and I've known her for a long time. We had Filiberto Estevez, the chef from Gracie Mansion, who does make great oatmeal raisin cookies and popcorn, but he gave us the recipe, and so Martha and I stood next to her. She said, put this in. I put it in. She said, do this. I did it, and then who knows when they got cooked, but it looked like they were going to work.
I'm sure they did. finances, we always seem to come back there. Your budgetary numbers, I'm sure, aren't getting any brighter.
I actually am optimistic on the economy. I've been saying this now for 3 or 4 weeks, that when you talk to small store owners, they will tell you a few more people coming in. Restaurateurs will tell you business a little bit better. The year-to-year comparisons will be easier. The housing supply around the country is getting used up a little bit. The population still grows, and nobody's building new houses. 4% mortgage rate makes it something affordable for a lot of people that would not otherwise be able to at higher interest rates. Your car is a year older, and at some point it's going to wear out. Whether you like it or not, you're going to have to buy a new car. So I'm somewhat optimistic on the economy. We've not seen, and probably won't see, an uptick in our tax revenues. And even if there is, while the percentage increases will be good, you have a stock, it goes down 95% the first year, second year it goes up 100%, you're still down 90%, even though your average performance is plus 2.5% a year. And that's what will happen to us next. The big income generators like the big banks, they've got so many losses carried forward, they won't be paying taxes for a while, no matter how much money they make. I want them to make money because then they can pay bonuses, and we do when people spend their money in the stores and restaurants and hotels, we have a chance to, that then we helps the city tax revenues. Also, if banks make money, they'll start making loans, which is good for a lot of business and residential. The tax revenues at some point here will stop declining. We're at the moment, after you're looking at April 15th, which is a heavy tax day, we're slightly worse, I think, than we had projected, but pretty much the same as we projected, which is $5 billion lower for this coming year than it was in 2008. So we have to economize. We've cut $3 billion out of the budget. We've got to raise $1 billion in some kind of tax, probably sales tax. If we need some help from labor, there are a variety of things.
Layoffs still on the table? I know you're trying to avoid, but...
Which every agency's got to find a ways to do more with less. Some want to downsize. Part of that can be done with attrition. Well, it's harder in an economy like this where people don't leave as quickly. There will be some small layoffs. I think our current budget calls for about 3,500 layoffs on a base of roughly 300,000 people, so 1%. And if the economy proves, maybe that's not going to happen. Even that's not going to happen. But without help from labor, then, yeah, there will be more because, in the end, we have to balance our budget. And I think the public understands that. When you talk to people on the subway, and the steps of City Hall, even people are protesting stuff, they understand that the city just doesn't have the money and we've got to make choices.
I was talking with Dick Cody, who's the Senate president over in New Jersey the other day, and one of the things we got talking about budgets is we always do, unfortunately. And he said, "Well, we're hoping that the federal government will come to some aid." There is still the keeping the fingers crossed here that
federal government is part of it. Keep in mind when they give you stimulus money, that doesn't help your budget generally. It may help you build a bridge. That'd be great, and that may employ some few more people. That's great, but you can't use that money to balance your budget. And they did give us some money. Unfortunately, the big chunk of it goes through the state, and the state then distributes it. Our federal elected officials say, we're going to get this money to the city, and then they give the money to the state, and it doesn't get to us, and then there's sort of MIA when I'm complaining, hey, you said this, and it's not there. But we do get some of it, and that's a constant battle.
The state is also talking about, and I know that this is something that I've heard you talk about, and I know concerns you. I'm talking about some of the welfare rules, monies and qualifications. There's a big work component in the city of New York to welfare.
We are trying to make sure that we give people a hand up rather than a hand out. And if you are able-bodied, you have to do your part. Some people don't think you should have to do that. In fact, one of the craziness is there is a federal law that requires work if you get food stamps if you have dependents. And we insist that if you don't have dependents, you have to do it as well. People want to get rid of the able-bodied who don't have dependents. I mean, it's, you know, the welfare reforms, there's some that get rid of corruption. For example, fingerprinting is a very valuable thing, keeps you from double dipping. Some people say, oh, well, if there's no double dipping now, why do you need fingerprints? Well, it's the fingerprints that keep the double dipping from coming back. That's, you know, one of these nonsensical arguments. But if you take a look in the city, we have are very compassionate. The public is willing to reach into their pockets and support those who are less lucky, but they're only willing to do that if they think everybody is trying to do their best. And our all of our welfare, social services, however you want to phrase it, efforts have focused on what we call the working poor, what I describe as the somebody who sets the alarm clock and punches the time clock. They don't, a lot of them don't make enough money to make ends meet, but at least they are working and trying. And so those I'm very comfortable that we should help. That's what food stamps as a supplement should be for, and a variety of other programs. Public hospitals taking anybody that walks in. You know, you can argue public schools is everybody gets together, and if you had didn't have a public school system, a lot of people wouldn't be able to afford school. Nobody thinks that that's what we should do. We should all get together, and those who have more are going to pay more, and those who have less are going to pay less. But a public school system is a good example of something where we all agree everybody should have access. And there are some people who want to roll back all of these things. It would be a, you know, it's hard to explain to people just how bad things could get. The welfare rolls keep coming down in our city. The people, number of people that sleep on the streets has diminished dramatically. We have something like 1 out of 3,500 people sleeping on the streets. L.A. has something like 1 in 100. San Francisco, 1 in 200. There are some cities, Chicago and Miami or something in the middle, 1 in 2,000. But New York has a lot to be proud of. We've really worked very hard, and we've helped an awful lot of people get jobs and support them through things like the Earned Income Tax Credit. If the Earned Income Tax Credit is basically a cash payment, but it goes to people at work. If you don't work, don't file a tax return, you cannot qualify. And this is a federal, state, and city program. So that's another program that helps the working poor.
This program that people are talking about taking the work component out for some, if not not all, but for some people, I would think that would increase the cost of the program, would it not?
I don't know if it increases the cost.
Or is it just a push sideways?
Well, you know, it may be more people would then try to participate. I don't know whether that's true or not, but I think what it really does is it gives the people who are paying the taxes, the middle class of the city, saying, hey, you know, why should my tax money go to somebody who's not even trying? And we, in the work component, incidentally, isn't exactly all that onerous. There are jobs and there's training, and training qualifies. What doesn't qualify is taking a basket weaving course in school. I mean, that's, you know, there was, it's that kind of an abuse. And they say, well, you learned something in basket weaving, you know, how to be a good citizen. Come on.
Back to your meeting with the president yesterday real fast. Was there any conversation among the four of you about trade schools and education in that vein?
You know, when you talk to the president, and this is the second president
I've spent time with,
you don't get down to the details.
Yeah.
You know, they'd say, well, you know, talk to the secretary.
Right.
The president did mention education for people who are adults who are out in the workforce who didn't.
Yeah.
In the city, what we've tried to do is have, they don't use the term vocational schools, I think more technical schools, but some people plan not to go to college, but plan to go out into the workforce right away when they finish high school. Having said that, you need to be able to read and write and math. You need a
computer
good education. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so these programs are the right things for some people. And it's fascinating. Some of the kids that go to that then decide to go to college. Some that go to the non-work kinds of schools go into the workforce. So, you know, you don't know. But the important thing is the kids go to school, regardless of which kind of school they go to. It's like we have these theme schools, and kids go because they're excited about the program. For example, sports management. Doesn't matter whether they go into sports management. If they get the skills, sports management will be one of the alternatives they'll have. But there's a whole periphery of whatever word is.
Well, I think the Yankees need a little sports management these days. That's my comment, not yours.
I know the manager. He's a great guy. You know, why they're not winning, I don't know. They haven't asked me to play, though.
Or manage.
You know, manage.
All right, Mr. Bear, hang on. We've got some folks that want to ask some questions. Also, Figs has left open a couple of lines here, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. We will be right back.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
A couple of more minutes here, and we dedicate those to you, Mr. Mayor. If you can grab your headphone right there, we will get to these. We'll start with line number four. That's Carmine out in Staten Island. Carmine.
Yes, John. Both of you guys are great. My question, John, to the mayor.
Yes.
We're using Nissan police cars as opposed to the hybrid Ford. Can you tell me why we chose Nissan?
Well, Carmen, you know, the police department has been using cars built in Canada, and the Nissan car that they're trying, I think they bought 16 of them, if I remember the number, to try them, is built in America, in Tennessee. So, you know, from a jobs point of view, the jobs are here with this one. There are other alternatives, and we've got to look for the best car. We will get the best car for the taxpayer and for our police department. No matter where it's built, I'd prefer if it was built in America. It's great for this country. But the most important thing is that the police have the tools they need to keep the city safe.
Well, I will tell you, Mr. Mayor, one of the things I see on a regular basis are government cars, New York City cars, Prius, alternative hybrids.
Yeah, we are making, look, we made the commitment to reduce our greenhouse gases and save money, which this does as well when you have a lot of cars that use a lot less fuel. And we're doing it. Do we have everything done? No, we have a commitment 30% down for the city's greenhouse gases, city meaning the city buildings and city cars, by 2017, and for the whole city, that's the private sector as well, by 2030. And we're going to lead by example. We're going to do it, and then everybody else.
Dina in Manhattan, you have a question for the mayor. Go.
Hello. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous. I'd like to find out, with all the problems that the city is going through financially and with everything else, school systems, why are these rubber rooms still active?
Well, Dina, the union contracts that we have for many, many years and continue to have clauses in them as to how you can part company with the teacher if you don't think the teacher's doing a good job. There's also civil service protections and some other protections that teachers have. In the case of what are called the rubber rooms, and they're called the rubber rooms, I gather, because people bounce around from them, there are teachers who, some of which the system thinks should not be part of the school system, and they have a right to defend themselves. You can argue that the process takes much too long. I don't have any problems with teachers being able to make the case that, you know, their supervisor is wrong, but something that goes on for a couple of years, there's really something wrong with that kind of system. And lately, in fact, we've said to our principals, since we have to pay these people for up to a couple of years, and we are running out of money, you got to hire some of them into your schools. Now, some of the principals say, oh, well, I don't want them in my schools. They're not good for the kids. And I'm very sympathetic for that. We've always said we're never going to force anybody down the principal's throat. And so we're trying to find some balance just because if we've got to pay people, and some of these teachers have been there a long time, so their compensation, you know, based on seniority is very significant. And it's a fine balance. And will we get the balance right? I hope so.
All right. Let's go to Nate in Queens. Nate, you're with John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, John. Question for you. The entrance to the Midtown Tunnel, there's a billboard, presumably sponsored by the city, which states that idling engines increases asthma, cancer, and heart disease. My question is there a better way to educate people about the effects of global warming, et cetera, without extreme exaggerations?
I think there's two issues here. Again, global warming, I don't care what anybody says. The science is there. There is something bad happening to our planet, and I don't know how bad it's going to be or what the causes are. Science is pretty sure what's happening and pretty sure what's causing it, but you're never 100% sure. But it's one of those things that if we don't take precautions and we make a mistake, later on it may be too late. But there's a separate issue here, and I think that's what the billboard tries to address. The quality of the air that you breathe today, forget about the impact on the whole planet down the road, the quality of the air today is very easy to measure, and there's no question what causes pollution in the air, and there's no question what pollution in the air does to people that breathe that air. We have parts of our city where young kids go to the hospital with four times the national average of asthma attacks. There's no question that breathing bad stuff can cause cancer, or smoke is one thing, but, you know, don't, you know, breathe. There was the old joke, I think Lindsay was reputed to said, I don't know whether he really said it, I'd never breathe any air I couldn't see. It's cute, but it's, you know, tells you how far we've come. Today, the air is, compared to the old days, much better. I think Nat, one of the things, Nate, that if you don't scare people and tell them the serious stuff, then they don't listen.
Speaking
they don't pay
of scaring
attention.
People, the TV ads that the city, I think it's the city that's running them with this anti-smoking
right.
campaigns.
Yeah.
It is the city, right?
Yeah, sure.
It's the state that's running those. Those are pretty scary.
The city has had some, too, that are Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. There's one guy who I've met him, actually, just in a crowd. He came up, introduced himself. You know, he's had a tracheotomy.
Yeah,
he speaks out of his throat, and he's been a very effective spokesman. You know, it's like with kids, for example, in driver ed. They always show you these pictures of these terrible accidents. If kids don't stop to realize, my goodness, if I drink or I speed, that could be me, you know, should you be scaring people? If that's the only way is to get them to pay attention, I suppose so.
All right. Well, maybe we can scare them into turning around next Friday here, and we'll talk again.
You will not scare your audience. They'll be here, including that guy I met in the subway this morning.
Mr. Mayor, have yourself a good weekend.
You too.
And a good week ahead. Thank you very much for coming in again this morning. That's going to do it for me for this week. We'll kind of regroup here on Monday, I hope, sometime between 5:30 and 9 o'clock on the John Gambling Show at News Talk Radio 710. WR.